This week on RSBNB Update, the Christmas Quest is here and we give it a solid 10 out of 10. A check-in with the mining and smithing rework and how everyone now wants a chick axe. Also, the astronomically rare chances for receiving skill pet drops. This is RSBNB Update, episode 650, recorded Friday, December 15th, 2017, The Chick Axe. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. This week, middle of December already, the year is wrapping up quick. So is the RuneScape update schedule for the year. This week, we've got the Christmas update to discuss, and joining us on the podcast this week is Parnassias. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Good to be back. It's a good time of the year for it. I love their Christmas events. So.
Oh, yeah, me too. Yep. Me too. And, you know, this was the first time we really had a run-up to the Christmas event because we had the Clockwork disassembly event back in November to gather all the Clockwork pieces to kind of put us in the mood for what has become the Genome Project.
And they tied that in well.
Yeah.
With Pinocchio Gnome.
That's right. He wants to become a real boy, given the gift of life. And, you know, that's one of the few Christmas stories that Jagex hasn't done before. So very nice to see that here in this case. So we're going to go through a brief overview of the Christmas Quest. So this, I have to say, I think felt more traditional. What do you think?
With the characters and all, so the story, obviously, is not traditional Christmas, but the characters and such and the way they implemented it all. I love their Christmas events and same as most of their Easter events. These are the type of things that I like. Just those little quests, self-contained, give you a nice little, you know, cosmetic reward at the end and just fun to do. So, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, this also gave us a great new level of immersion here, because with this event, they have Christmas-fied the Grand Exchange in Varrock. They have also Christmas-fied the entirety of Priftinus and the Max Guild with this. So snow yes. and a nice frosty look to the game. And, you know, this is the level of immersion we probably haven't had since around 2004 or so. So that was nice to see.
I'm in Grand Exchange at the moment because I didn't realize that you could get the pets from the like the energy rifts and the sort of power generators. You can actually, this year they're actually you can't get shards, you can't fill urns or anything like that. But there is a chance for the pets this year.
Skilling
that
pets.
Was confirmed. Skilling pets.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting here chasing Rue. I figured, well, hey, rather than having to run around RuneSpan, I'll just sit here and. I must say the XP, it's almost 100K an hour.
That's not too bad. That's not too bad. And it's only going to be here for a week. I don't have a real issue with that.
Oh, no. It's just great layback. Nice little Christmas gift. And as you said, it's here for a week, so it's not going to sort of blow anything out like they do when they have them sort of the 4 or 6 weeks like the beach events and things.
That's right. So the entirety of this event revolves around, of course, animating the little gnome and making him a real boy or a real person. So there's a number of phases to this quest. First things first, of course, as with many of the other previous Christmas quests, Santa has gone missing. So you need to hunt Santa down, and it's rumored that Thurgo might have seen where Santa went. So you have to go talk to Thurgo, and of course, what does he want? He wants a red berry pie. So you give him a red berry pie, and he tells you that, oh boy, this Santa has gone into the Grotworm Lair where the Queen Black Dragon is, because someone told them that if you roast the gnome on the Queen Black Dragon's fire, it would become animated, just like works with the Royal Crossbow.
And that's what I loved about it. It's just little throwbacks to sort of actual lore that's in the game that they tied it all in nicely.
Yeah. And now here's where the spoilers will begin with this. You get to the Queen Black Dragon and you see Santa's sleigh has been damaged and you see some ashes on the ground and you examine the ashes and it turns out the ashes are those of Rudolph.
I got a little chuckle out of that.
Yeah, and at this point I was thinking, boy, this is a Christmas event and Jagex is going to kill Rudolph, huh? Wow, that is something that you would only see on modern serialized TV where they have no problem killing main characters off. But we'll get to the Deus Ex part of this quest a little bit later into how that is resolved. So after this, you talk to Santa and you realize that, you know, that isn't the way that you wanted to animate the little guy. So instead, you chat with Doc, Aubrey, and Orla.
You did forget one thing where we had to go into the belly of the Black Dragon.
Oh, right. Yeah, I don't think we did that before for any previous quest, did we?
Yes, yeah, no, the very original, I can't remember the name of it, but where we were introduced to the Queen Black Dragon, we had to rescue the siren, I think it was, that was inside the Queen Black Dragon.
Okay, so that's why that area existed then.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm blanking on the name of that quest as well. That's probably not good, but... Anyways, after that, you return to the Grand Exchange and you chat with Doc, Aubrey, and Orla, and they'll give you ideas on ways that you might try animating the little guy. And, you know, some of the ways that you can animate him are with the electrical machine there. And this electrical machine requires essence. No, sorry. It's the Runecraft
rift
that pale energy, and obviously pulling in on the invention idea there, and that doesn't work. So then you move over to the unstable rift, and to start using this activity, you need to provide 10 rune essence to Aubrey, and then you keep channeling the rift until it reaches 100%, and you will inevitably find anomalies that you need to seal, and you get runecrafting or summoning XP with. And then finally with Orla, it's shown that there's a obelisk in the desert. And Orla just teleports the entire obelisk from the desert all the way to the Grand Exchange. Mm-hmm. And
again, I think that's another good throwback to Menophos with the soul obelisk there. So they're using obviously stuff that's already in game, but they've tied it in. Yeah, I thought it was really, really clever the way they tied it all in together.
Yeah, definitely. The obelisk gives you either divination or prayer XP. And once you do that, you siphon it until you absorb 100%. And of course that doesn't work as well. So none of the three methods on their own will work. And then wrapping up the quest, you talk to Santa and you teleport to the Phoenix Lair to get the Phoenix Lair to try it out. But the Phoenix is unable to animate the gnome as well. So that's fine. Now, also at the Phoenix Lair, that is where we see the resurrection of Rudolph, which was a nice surprise, I think, because I mean, you can't really have a full Christmas event with Rudolph being in the Fort of Ashes. So I think that was a nice little touch that they did for this event. And at the end of the day, you get a small little Rudolph pet to follow you around with this at the end, basically a miniature Rudolph.
Yeah, the Rudolph Reborn, they're calling it. And it's a little Rudolph with flaming wings. So cute. I mean, a really great little pet. It's just a shame that we can't override our legendary pets with these. Because there's some really good pets in game.
But I mean,
I'm sorry, the legendary pet is just so useful. It is the thing I have out 99% of the time. So it's just a shame we have these great pets that, you know, a lot of us can't use because, you know, you lose that functionality of a legendary pet.
Yeah. And, you know, that would be a great little ninja fix, I guess, would be allow that to be overridden. And then, I mean, I can see why they wouldn't want to do that because of the cosmetic value of legendary pets and the value behind them from the Solomon's General Store. But I mean, at this point in the game, they're asking us to spend, you know, how much time unlocking skill pets. What should prevent us from using those with legendary pets, right?
Yeah, exactly. So. And I mean, people know the value of legendary pets, you know, and I've told a lot of people, you know, hey, grab this. It doesn't matter which one you get. You know, they all function the same. And, you know, I've got the Rory the reindeer out at the moment. I actually have three legendary pets. They all do the same thing just because I do like the look of them, and I'll use those occasionally. But I'd like to override. I mean, I'd love to have little Rudolph out at the moment. Yep. You know, there's other times. And my skilling pets, you know, I'd love to have my thieving pet out a lot more. But, you know, it's just one of those things that I don't know if it is an oversight. I can sort of understand on the advertising side of things, but I think enough people have them and understand what they're about now that you don't need to have them actually there.
Right. And you know, they got their own category in the store as well. So it's not like they're ever forgotten. So.
That's right.
There's a nice little side note right there. Ninja Team make us able to override our legendary pets with our skilling pets.
It's been requested a lot of times, and they never give an answer on it. They never say no, but they never answer and say, oh, yeah, we'll look at it.
And finally, after returning to the Grand Exchange, it's determined that to animate the little guy, the final thing you're going to try is you're going to try a combination of all three powers, Aubrey, Orla, and Doc. And after combining them, you put him in the machine, and here we go. And out he emerges as a little gnome child. So that is the ultimate answer to this. And that is effectively quest complete after you watch a cutscene. And, you know, some of the cutscene work that they did for this was actually really, really nice. Just the angling and the atmospheric effects on it. So
yeah, they did a great job.
Overall, I think 10 out of 10.
Yeah, it's a Christmas event. 10 out of 10. I loved it. And then, again, this is where I say it's always a shame that these things are only in game for 2 weeks to disappear and never be seen again. I'd love each year if they just chose two or three from the previous year that once you have done this year's, you can go into a little portal. You don't need any rewards. You just want the playthrough that you can see these. And, you know, and someone who joins the game next year on mobile and has not had the chance to do something like this can still experience just how fun those little quests were.
I agree. Mm. And, you know, for some reasons, they did that last year with the 15 yes. years. That was a really nice one. Granted, they weren't exactly the same, but it was a nice touch.
So. Yeah, but even then, you don't need to rewrite them. You can just pop them in as they were and just give people that experience.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, after you complete this quest, just take a moment and look around the revamped Grand Exchange in Varrock here at the Christmas treatment. It's been given from the presents to the trees, to the lights, to the frost, to the fire on top of the Grand Exchange podium itself. Really, really quite amazing Christmas ambiance here, and something that I think really completes the season here for me, because, you know, for a number of years it was always a thing to log into RS on, you know, the second week before Christmas and do the Christmas event, and some of them didn't exactly feel you know, RuneScape-y plus Christmas as we'd, you know, come to expect in the 2000s decade of RuneScape, let's just say. But I think this year, and especially last year, we're finally getting back to that. So with that, I'm really happy with this, and I have nothing to complain about with this Christmas event. So
definitely not. They said getting back to our roots, and they're actually doing it. And yeah, kudos to the mods who developed this, because you have done a spectacular job. You guys get a lot of crap about you know, sort of things that people don't like, but you sort of. When there's something really good in there, people, oh, yeah, that's good, and, you know, don't give you a pat on the back, and you all deserve it for that.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. That's exactly what we should be saying with this event. So. All right, so that is the Genome Project. And, you know, I would really want to replay this, you know, on Christmas Eve, but you can't. So
unfortunately, yeah.
I did take a video of my playthrough, which if you guys are watching on the YouTube version of the show, you might have just seen some of the clips from that, but that's the best I can do, unfortunately. So, All right. And just a reminder that this weekend is mini game weekend, from the 15th until the 18th. So that's plus one gold Castle Wars ticket per game, regardless of if you win, lose, or draw, plus one medal from Fish Flingers, double commendation from Pest Control and Conquest, bonus XP and rewards from Barbarian Assault. Bosses killed in the Dominion Tower counted twice for the purposes of reward unlocks.
So get out there and get those ones done.
Yeah, I think I should go to the Dominion Tower this weekend. And along with that, it's plus 50% Dominion Factor. And now here's another big one that I feel could also be useful. Plus 50% produce at the Livid Farm.
Yeah. I think it was 18 months ago now that they actually halved the points you had to get there. Now they're giving you an extra 50% on top of that as well. So if you really do hate it and you want to get those unlocks done, get out there and do it for that.
I think that's probably where I will end up this weekend. Let's not tell anyone about that, but that's the case.
See, I never minded a Livid Farm. I understand what you were saying about it. It's got nothing to do with farming, really. But, you know, I didn't mind that area, personally.
There's also 600 daily bonus points from Cabbage Face Punch Bonanza, 100% increased reputation in Menaphos from Shifting Tombs. Double from Shifting Tombs.
I won't give you an explicit tag and tell you what I actually call Shifting Tombs.
So. Oh, I can imagine. I can imagine about that.
the same as the next one.
Shattered Worlds grants 50% extra anima.
Yes, we have different names for those two.
Yeah, and double points from Stealing Creation. And, you know, it's these two updates that are what influenced us to not do a RuneScape year in review this year. So more on our plans for the end of the year later on this. So, all right, on to the patch notes this week. A relatively slim edition compared to last week's Mega Ninja Week updates. So for this week, the Zaros Godsword, including the Shadow and Broken varieties, has had its color adjusted to better match the color of the unbroken version. Converting memories to energy with an empty Divine-O-Matic vacuum equipped will no longer destroy the energy. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
The message on a compactor device when consuming items has been updated to show the amount of items that will be consumed. That's nice. The compacting, teleport compactor, potion compactor and whatnot, when those came out, kind of did confuse me. So that's nice to see some clarification on that. Terrorbird racing broadcast messages can now be toggled on or off via the host Iris south of Falador. That's nice. It's not in the user interface and it's actually in-game.
Yes.
Offhand Adamant Swords now deal the correct amount of damage. And Clan Citadel upkeep costs have been reduced to 20% of their original value to ease the maintenance of Clan Citadels. And we went through those last week on update. And if you're wanting to find the notes for that, you can just head on over to our show notes at update.rsbnb.com. And we have the link there for the pertinent information on episode 649. You know, it's really going to help a lot of clans, I think.
Yeah, it's going to help a lot. I don't know if they've sort of gone too far backwards. 20% of what it originally was, that's 80% off. That seemed like a lot.
Yeah.
So if they try maybe drop it by 20%, or even if they dropped it by 50% to see how it went. But, you know, it is what it is. And I think it also is going to have to tie in with what they're planning for the clan avatar coming soon too.
Right.
So, and, you know, that is
a big concern for us at Clan Quest, because, you know, if the amount of XP you get from the avatar, like, you know, you're going to get the standard boost no matter where you are on the world with the avatar. But if you want more than that, you're going to need to cap or raise your clan fealty. And if you only need to reach these certain milestones for a clan that's very active, that could fill up quickly. So we're kind of worried how that's going to work, but we'll just have to wait and see when that comes out.
I mean, once you're captain, you're still going in there. It doesn't matter. It's just that excess just sort of sits there and then just disappears at the end of it. So it's not going to affect anyone like, oh, I have to be in there the first day because if we captain, right, we're going to miss out.
Yeah.
So it just encourages sort of clan members to get there. If you want that extra XP, you've got to go in and get it. And I like that idea. It also means that, you know, for people who want to say you're doing divination and you have the choice of either the Muspa pet to collect the extra energies, or you want the 6% bonus from the clan. You had one or the other, so the person with the clan avatar was always sort of at a little bit of a disadvantage to the other members who were down there. So it just sort of makes it a bit fairer all around, I think. I do like the implementation of what they're doing there.
Yeah, that's true. I'll agree with you on that. All right, so now the mining and smithing content rework showcase. We both watched this, and this was something that we have been following intently here, because I think that it is going to be one of the hugest updates to ever hit the game, and you know, we have talked about it and provided feedback previously on the podcast here, you know, specifically to Mod Jack and Mod Dag, and have received acknowledgement that our feedback has been heard. So that's great with that. So from the looks of it, they have it almost at a prototype stage here from their testing square that they showed on stream. So yeah. Before we go too much into it, what are your general thoughts of this?
I mean, I love virtually all of it. I was, from what I saw, I was really excited, and I know there was some of the people who were watching it were jumping up and down about some of the issues. We won't name what side of the community were complaining about certain things, but I like that they stood their ground and said, yep, they basically said, that's the way it's going to be. You know, we'll look at other things, but that's the way it is, so tough. So they stood their ground there. One thing that disappointed me, they said it doesn't make sense to make them level 120 since there's no level 120 combats, and they can't make sort of this is one of the notes I had. They can't make armor and that at 120, so there's no point doing it. Now, I found that type of linear thinking, yeah, a little bit disturbing from people who are supposed to be creative. I mean, we don't need armor, but little add-ons, you know, additional perks and things that we could create as a master smither. If I've got 110, I unlock something that I can make to sell to PVMers. They can attach to their sword or attach to their armor for a bit of a bonus. Yeah, that is that perfect. I mean, they did that with when they bought out Batch 2 of Invention from 99 to 120. There's no real big unlocks, but it's good little bonuses, things that you can make. And I thought that was the perfect opportunity. Now, they don't have to implement it right now because, you know, let's face it, this is a lot of work.
Yeah.
This development time.
14 and, you know, pages worth of notes still to go through.
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, it's not something that I would expect, you know, that you've got to sort of cut it off somewhere. But they could sort of say, listen, at this stage, there's nothing. We're going to push it to 120, but we might do like a batch 2 version of it. I do apologize for my dogs out there. My neighbors are out in the backyard now. So, but, you know, it's something that they could have said, you know, at this stage, nothing. But in the future, we could look at doing that and implementing these type of things. And as I said, we don't need weapons and armor in that. We just need little add-ons that we can create and sell to those PVMers.
That's a very good point, because, you know, the way it's looking right now is we're going to have weapons and armor going all the way up to tier 90. And it was said on stream that the weapons and armor that we get at tier 90 right now in the smithing skill are going to be roughly equivalent to tier 80, because they can't make them as good or as powerful as the tier 90s that you get from PVM. And that's their way of protecting PVM. That's fine. But give the smiths, like you were saying, Pern, something beyond level 99, for example. That might be a good way of doing it. Or maybe they could even put it in below level 100, though I think that might kind of defeat the purpose of having it as, you know, truly elite content, so to speak. So
exactly.
So just a bit of an overview of where we're at right now with this. They have implemented all base mechanics and the rock types. Mining has been implemented to be a lot more AFK. The stackable ore that we saw in the previous prototype is no longer a thing because it was determined that that would be too powerful.
Thank God.
Yeah. Yeah. So now every...
Yeah, that's... Sorry, if I could just interrupt there again. That was when they first showed that, I thought that... I did not like that idea at all. Yes, it's convenient, but unlimited ore in one spot really, really had me worried. So I'm glad they did that.
Yeah, and the alternate response to this is the ore bag, which stores a set number of ores, lots of copper ores, fewer rune ores, and fewer high-level ores going forward. That's their answer to the AFK problem with this. And yep. You know, they say every 20 seconds or so, your character will take a break. And you just...
What did you think of the little animation, resting animation?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's still in the that's still very early on, and you know, it looks good. I mean, maybe could use a bit more polish, but I think it's a good general idea. Maybe just have I think what I would prefer personally, if I was making the decision, I would just have the person sit down on the rock.
Yeah, that's another one. They just turn around and sit down. Yeah.
No. And then, you know, you will start mining automatically again after a short period of time. And the amount of time that you take during this break is governed by your agility skill. It's about 15 seconds at level 1, and it becomes almost unnoticeable if you have level 99 agility. So you'll still take a break, but it won't last for nearly as long. So that's their mechanic to influence how long the break is. And the amount of breaks you take is governed by your actual mining level. So you can – the idea behind this is that they said that you can either, you know, have a truly AFK mining experience like you have right now with Saren Stones, or you can decide that you want to be truly attentive to your mining and get XP faster, which I think makes sense.
Yeah, and I like that sort of the way they sort of marry that together. You know, you can AFK, you can do higher intensity, and, you know, you get rewarded for that. So I think they implemented that really well.
Yeah, and along with this, they have something there that they're calling now rockertunities, like an opportunity, little sparkling rocks. And if you click those, you get 10 times the amount of mining XP that you would normally get from that rock. And you know that, of course, anything you hear regarding XP or the amount of time something takes, that is all subject to change. What they're going for right now is the mechanics behind it. So basically the idea behind this from a high level is that you will strike the rock once every 4 ticks, and there's a number of points equal to your mining level plus a bonus for the pickaxe you're using, and this controls how fast you fill up the bar over your head. And once that bar fills up, you get the ore. Now, if you're mining something low level like copper, you're going to get that a whole lot more quick than if you're mining rune or something way higher at tier 90. So they're even providing feedback as to when you're going to get your ore with this. And it's well known, which I think is really good. Mm. And it's indicative of a, how can I say this? Anytime you have a interaction in a game that provides you feedback on what's happening, that is generally considered to be well-designed. So, right on. We talked about the ore bag being the replacement for stackable ore. People were wondering what happens with the coal bag because of this. They're saying it's likely that the coal bag from Dungeoneering will be sold as an upgrade to the ore bag.
And that's, speaking of that ore bag, I mean, that's, they're saying at this stage, they're starting, it's got 1,000 spots in it. So if you're doing the copper, and as you said, each, as you go up in ore, they'll take up more of that room. This is a perfect opportunity that we can use as quest rewards and things, but the ability to unlock, you know, a higher grade of ore bag. I wouldn't even mind if they said, okay, it starts at 500. If you've got the coal bag, it goes up to 750. But, you know, we'll introduce a higher level quest or even artisan workshop, you know, just implement something where you can use that to buy, you know, or develop and get a higher grade. I mean, I prefer them as quest rewards. I like uniques as quest rewards. So, but I know a lot of people don't want to do quests to get those. So, you know, if they put in Artisan's Workshop, but yeah, I wouldn't have an issue with that. I would prefer to see it personally as a quest reward. But you know, they can use those unlocks and get a higher quality bag as you go up, and it sort of gives people goals and aims, which is, you know, what we want to have in the game.
Yeah, and you know, come to think of it, we don't really have any quests that are truly focused around mining at the high level, do we?
Not at high level, no. You've got the Boric and Doric quests and those type of things, but nothing at the high level, so it'd be a good opportunity to do something there perhaps.
Now I'm getting excited.
I'm watching this and I've got all these things running through my head. I was really a couple of disappointing things in it, but overall I was really excited with what I saw.
Yeah, and you know, I was for the poll that said let's release the high level portion of the smithing update when it came out, rather than, you know, releasing everything all in one batch. But now I'm actually moving over to the side where I'm glad that we're getting this whole massive expansive update here for the smithing skill. So I think the right choice was made regarding that now. Yeah.
Well, especially that they're actually working on it. I was worried if we want the whole expansion. Like, oh, yeah, no worries, but it's going to take us so much time, so we're going to push it back another 2 years.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
what I was sort of worried about. So, yeah.
Yeah. Now, there is also the question asked about agility benefits for this, specifically how much it will be. You know, we talked about this before on the podcast, specifically regarding strength and agility bonuses. The agility bonus is a max of 15% at level 99, which is, if you want the full math behind it, is 1/10 of the agility skill will be subtracted from the number of cycles available, up to a 15% improvement rate. Whereas with your strength skill, that also plays a role, up to 10%, as was previously talked about before. So it's not something, you know, where the people who are, you know, skillers on their own are going to be unfairly penalized for this right now. So,
And I do. I was sort of always a bit iffy about strength being part of it, because that is more of a combat strength. But again, we're getting sort of that bit of a marriage between sort of combat skills and normal skills. I do like the fact that they are, you know, giving some use to agility. Because, yeah, agility is just – it's one of those skills that I've got to do it for max. But, you know, now that it's actually having some effect on other aspects of skilling, I do like that they've done that.
Yeah, and, I mean, there was also the talk about what happens with Iron Men in this, and the ultimate talk – about Iron Man was that, you know, we're not going to hold back the mining and smithing update for Iron Man, and it's going to be better in some cases for Iron Man because they'll actually be able to make tier 80 armor for themselves now if they have tier 90 smithing, but at the same time they're going to have some other negative downsides going along, and that they're not going to be able to get rune items, for example, from NPC drops.
Yep. So, and I have an Iron Man. I chose Iron Man mode once I've maxed and everything for a true challenge. And when they're talking about, oh, we might look at doing something different for Iron Man, No. Because the whole idea of Iron Man, and they've been watering it down the last couple of years to the point where I'm not logging onto my Iron Man that often anymore, because it's not that same challenge or that same prestige of having an Iron Man account high level, because they've just given so much away with things. And you know, the reason we do this is for that hard challenge. If you don't like it, go to Mr. X, get your little disc and convert it to a regular account. But if you want to be an Iron Man, you suffer that challenge of how am I going to do it? What am I going to do? That's what I like about Iron Man, and that's I don't want to see them watering it down just because, you know, a couple of people say, oh, it's too hard. Well, that's the whole idea. It's supposed to be hard.
Exactly. Now, here's something that you and I are going to be very happy about, and I had to pause the stream here and rewind it a couple times when I was watching this here. The mining resources and smith gear will be removed from drop tables after the mining and smithing update goes live. And will.
Not maybe.
Will be removed. And
this is what I was talking about earlier, where we had a certain area of the community jumping up and down about this, and they said, bad luck.
It is absolutely amazing to finally hear this, that this is going to be arriving in an update. You know, we already fixed, I think, to a large degree, the issue with runes. And I think this is going to fix, you know, to a large degree, the issue with various other Slayer creatures out there and whatnot. So this is really good to hear that these are being removed. And yes, they are going to be replaced with some kind of other item that will be equally as valuable, they say, and for invention will also give the same kind of invention parts, probably. So, you know, the people who do combat are not going to be completely out of luck. They're doing this to protect the integrity of the mining and smithing skills with this. So it's just really great to hear this. And
it's making elking sort of, it's something you might do occasionally. It's not a source of your main revenue as it is at the moment.
No. And that's another thing. They said elk values will also be protected with similar items being substituted in. So, you know, I don't know how they're going to do that, what the new items will be, but maybe, I don't know, maybe that's just a bullet we need to bite on the elking front.
Yeah, that's it. I think they're saying to protect people's banks. Well, my personal opinion is you've got months and months you've known that this is going to be happening, so get that stuff elk now. You know this is coming out. I can sort of see, you know, oh, but someone's been away from the game for, you know, 2 years and they've come back and all of a sudden their bank is, you know, they've lost all that money. So I can sort of see that. Yeah, if they're doing the way it sounded, they're going to do some sort of untradeable. So, say like a corrupted rune plate body that you can only elk break down to get. So you can either elk it for the money it's worth now, or break it down for those components you want for invention, but you won't be able to trade them. So they'll be for your use only.
That would be actually a good way of doing it, I think.
Mm.
And, you know, this is almost in some kind of ways to what they had to do when RuneScape 2 came out, because, you know, there was actually, believe it or not, back in RuneScape Classic, an industry out there for sorting logs, ores, and fish, because we didn't have noting in the RS Classic bank system. So in RS Classic, there was actually a whole industry of people who would hover around the various skilling spots, and they would give you GP for the fish that you would have, because they would take your basket of fish, take it to the certer, and then they would collect these certs and then just basically act as the middleman for these people. And if you look back at the transition from RS Classic to RS2, that industry completely disappeared and everyone thought it would be a big deal, but at the end of the day, it wasn't really.
Mm.
So that's kind of a parallel for this. Now, there is also the issue in the stream raised by Mod Shawnee about the spring cleaner of what, you know, what is the spring cleaner going to be useful for? Because the spring cleaner breaks down rune items that you get into rune bars, for example. I don't think they had an answer to that at this point.
No. And one thing that sort of disappointed me with that, because, I mean, A, it was something that people, you know, a lot of people when that first came out spent a lot of money on Treasure Hunter to try and unlock. Yes, you know, the last 2 years on the advent calendar it was given to people, but they've just allowed us to start making tight springs as an invention reward for that. So, you know, and a lot of people sort of, oh, yeah, bang. I'd never used it, never realized quite how good it was. And once I was able to make these tight springs, I started using it. And it is a really good tool. To say, oh, well, bad luck type thing, that's it. I think they should say, okay, listen, we can't do anything at the moment, but once we get all this in, we're going to look at what other uses we could make for this. It still works with your battle staves. So if you get your water, your earth, et cetera, that still breaks those down, but it's the that rune and adamant stuff that most people use it to break down. So I think they do need to look at that because it is a premium product that people have spent real money on that they need to make sure that it doesn't just disappear in the game.
That's right. I'm just trying to think of if, you know, maybe this spring cleaner issue could be tied to the items that they're going to replace on the drop tables with. I think that would be the best way of doing it. But the question is, I mean, if you get these corrupted items, as let's just assume they're called that for now, that you can alloc or you can disassemble, does that mean that if you use a spring cleaner on them, they will break down into constituent parts that you can sell on the exchange?
Well, no, because the spring cleaner only breaks them down as they drop from monsters.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, one thing, now your spring cleaner, you can load maybe magic notepaper or have something like that, and it can now note your bones if you're going dragon hunting or something. You know, maybe the tight springs, each spring can note a bone for you. You know, there's other opportunities out there they can use for this. They've just got to think outside the box. Yeah. Okay, it's not going to be break down these now, but what else can we do with it? Okay, if you've got the bone crusher or you know the upgrade from the arc, maybe not tied into the arc, but maybe if you've got the bone crusher from Dungeoneering, you can set it so that the spring cleaner will note the bones that don't get crushed and things like that.
Or another option you could do is have it be a literal bone crusher and give you, you know, a 1 in 10 or maybe a 25% chance of giving you a crushed bone meal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's different things that they could implement with that.
Yeah. And, you know, that I think should move the spring cleaner to a more combat-centric form of tool. So
yes, rather than just being, hey, look, I can sort of sell all these mining supplies by doing combat and just using the spring cleaner.
Yeah. All right. And you know, there was also a good quote here by Mod Jack. He says he's not opposed to making large changes like this, though he is opposed to making changes exclusively for Iron Man. And, you know, I think this sums up Iron Man in a good way. And this is a good stance for JX to have on this, is that Definitely. Iron Man should not be a major influence on this.
You don't like it, don't play that mode is my thoughts, you know. Just make it a regular account.
Yeah. All right. Now, some of the ores have been changed, of course. We have Adamant at level 30. And then moving on to level 40, there's Luminite Ore, which is now the secondary for Adamant and Rune. Rune is at level 50. Dracolith Ore is at level 60, which will probably smith a weaker form of Dragon, though it'll be doing this to protect the value of Dragon drop items, and plus that the Dragon items that we get now, like the Dragon limbs, the Dragon plate body, the Dragon plate legs and whatnot, are going to still maintain that they're Dragon because they were made in the Dragonkin Forge by the Dragonkin. So that protects their unique look and their unique drops. So I think that's a good way of going about it.
Good day. I thought they handled that well.
Yeah. Necrite ore will be at level 70 with secondary Phasmatite. And then Bane ore will be at level 80 with Dark Animica, which they're calling Purple God Energy, which is maybe something that Zaros could be made up of as a secondary. So, you know, I think some of these renamed ores are actually pretty good here. Specifically the idea of being able to make Bane weapons, which I think we could all find very useful at the end of the day.
Exactly. And that's, you know, yes, they're tier 80, but it's going to now give a use for, you know, higher level to have, you know, a unique item. So if you've got something that is, you know, stronger against Dark Beast or stronger against demons that you make with your Bane Ore, rather than just, I think everyone pretty much uses them for Dragon Bolts or Dragon Arrow. The Dragon Bolts or Dragon Bane Arrows to fight them. But if you actually have a niche use for these, I think it will sort of open up a market for that.
Yeah. They didn't say exactly what they were going to go with for the tier 90 ore. They were thinking Colossite ore or potentially Living Rocks as the tier 90 option to tie them into.
And I think they were talking about renaming it to Elder Rune.
Yes.
Just to
Yeah. And of course that makes sense because they want at the end of the smithing progression that you're still making a rune plate body and have that be the most powerful thing you can make with the smithing skill, because that goes back to RuneScape day one, which I think is a really nice touch.
Yeah.
So Elder Rune
pays homage to where the sort of everything sort of started with the game, which I thought was quite good.
Yeah, so I mean, we're going to be back to wearing rune armor potentially. So now just a little bit on how the pickaxes work. We got a bit of the background behind this. So each pickaxe will have a certain penetration value, and each ore will have a hardness value. And this determines how much progress and XP you'll get when you're mining a rock. So you'll be able to use a lower level pickaxe with a higher leveled rock, but you won't be able to necessarily make progress at mining it as if you were using a crystal pickaxe or an upgraded crystal pickaxe at tier 90. So
the better the hardness, the better the penetration, basically.
Yeah, and that's where your strength level also comes into affecting that. And once again, just like agility, it's going to be, you know, probably a 5 to 10% gain on this. So it's not something that you're going to feel that you absolutely need to train to. It's just going to be that nice little edge that you got. They also said with this that, I forget what the chain is, but they're going to have a special pickaxe at tier 90 that you make with the new ore, but there's also going to be an upgraded crystal pickaxe that's going to be different than the current crystal pickaxe. So the tier 90 crystal pickaxe will protect the current crystal pickaxe, which of course protects the dragon pickaxe. And that's the logic they're going for protecting the chain and keeping.
Yeah, harness. I think what they're going to do, you build on top of those as you go up. So so it's always going to be the dragon pickaxe is going to be the base, which will keep that current and not devalue it at all.
Yeah, and I mean, what they said also with this is they're going to provide extra benefits for using the crystal pickaxe at top tier, which is really good. So, this is what I like to see. This appears to be well designed so far.
Very well designed, and that
is really good, I think. So,
and I mean, it's taken a long time to get there, but you know, it's I don't mind from what I've seen. Yes, it's taken a long time to get there, but they've got pretty much everything right in my eyes.
Yeah, and you know, all the documents are here as well if anyone wants to have a look at them. And one also really encouraging thing is they said, yes, at this point we're doing this. We're not scrapping anything. This is the way it's going to be. We're just going to change minor things along the way. This is the mining and smithing rework.
Yep.
All right, so moving on to smelting. Smelting is pretty much the same as it is right now in game, except that a hopper will be added to all anvils and furnaces, and this will store ores and bars, and you'll be able to smelt directly from the hopper. So,
and you can have basically max stacks of each one in there.
Which removes the running to bank issue that is so apparent in early smithing. And for anyone who did smithing back in the day, that was one of the things that definitely slowed the skill down. And, you know, Jagex rightly says that, you know, the skill you have of running from your bank to the furnace should not impact the amount of XP that you can get. So, once again, ironing out all these little issues. Now, when it comes to smithing, you start by creating a new item and you'll receive that item as an unfinished item in your inventory. And each hit that you make on the item furthers its progression along. Now, basically the idea behind this is that to progress the item, it needs to be heated in a forge. And this is something that's also going to be added to all the furnaces around, because if it's not heated, you're not going to be able to make progress on it. So go ahead.
Sorry if I could just – this is the perfect opportunity to stop the devaluation of coal as well. You need coal to heat that fire, so coal is still going to be useful. I hope they do – they sort of said, yeah, we're looking at doing that perhaps. I think that should be a definite because coal is a heat source. You throw it in there, you heat it up to get that. That's the way smithing is done. So I think they should definitely implement that and keep that going, and that'll keep the value in coal. No more Mod Timbo saying just drop it.
Yeah, that's right.
And causing riots.
So with this also, if the item If the heat level on the item is hotter, you will get faster XP like this. And it's kind of like mining where you get XP on each hit. But at the end of the day, the XP per hour will be largely the same as it is now, though you'll get a little bit of an extra benefit for remaining more attentive and keeping your item hot when you're...
And if I could just interrupt there, they did actually give the breakdown of that. If you keep it above 90, you'll get a 4x multiplier. Between 75 and 90, you'll get a 3x multiplier. Between 50 and 75, you'll get a 2x multiplier. And once it goes under 50, you'll just get the straight 1 multiplier.
That's pretty good. So... And, you know, I think that allows you to find the most optimal level for attentiveness that you want, whether you want to, you know, keep it all the way up at 4 all the time or if you're comfortable going down to just 2. So,
and there's no pen. I mean, it's not like I have to do it this way each time. You can sit there, I'm doing 20 minutes, bang, bang, you know, keeping it above 90. And then someone comes in and you want to have a chat. So you just have to look over every now and then. And, yeah, once it's at 50, I'll just top it up now. So, you know, you're not going to... You don't have to concentrate on one side of it. You can do it the way you want to do it.
And this leads into what they're calling Rune Plate Body Plus One as an example. So this is basically taking a Rune Plate Body that you create, and it'll have the same wear requirement but higher combat stats. And the example they give with the Rune Plate Body Plus One is that it'll be made from a Rune Plate Body and 10 more rune bars. So right now, Tier 90 smithing makes tier 80 gear with a tier 90 wear requirement to protect PVM. And it's going to be through this upgrade process that you'll get the final gear that you use at tier 90. Rune items can be upgraded 3x, but a tier 90 item can be upgraded 5x. And then finally, you'll get something at the very end of this progression called a decorated rune plate body, for example, that's going to be untradeable and unusable, and you'll hand it into Thurgo or Trehearn, for example, for a good boost of XP. Mm. So this is the alternative forms of XP.
This is where we start looking at the money-making side of smithing for players, because we can make up to the upgraded, you know, your 3x for the rune or the 5x for the other ones, pop those on the GE, and, you know, those PVMers who just want to sit there and drop all their coin to get those levels up quickly, we'll buy those, just do the decorator so they get the big chunks of XP. It'll be the quickest XP out there, but it's going to cost them a lot of money to do, because, you know, they'll be buying it off the actual skillers. So it's, a good combination of using skilling for to make money from the PVMers.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that this really shows why we need the upgrade to mining and smithing as one whole comprehensive update, rather than, you know, just the high level pieces of content. Because, you know, if they added new high level stuff to smithing that was tailored towards just the high end of the people who are training it, I don't think we would have this new smithing mechanic and the new smelting mechanic in there with that. And I think this is what makes a big difference for the skill, at least the finishing side of it. So
for once, I'm glad my vote lost.
Yeah, same here, actually. let's see. Values of item stacks in game will be preserved when elk values are changed. Aiming to do a beta in early 2018 with very few limitations on who will participate. It likely won't be in game as we would see it, you know, on the surface world. We would likely get access to one of these test squares where we can test all the various mechanics and whatnot. So it's not going to be, you know, playability beta. It's just going to be, do we like the mechanics? Is there anything the players can suggest to make it better? And, you know, I think they need to do it that way, because if they make it part of the actual game rather than on its own test square, I don't think people will take it seriously as a beta. So
they need to do it that way. What I do love about this is doing it this way. I mean, we're getting it in very early before anything. It's a great QA testing, because, I mean, what have they got? 12 QA testers. They can't see everything or just think of every little thing out there. When you've got, you know, 100,000 players doing the same thing out there, and they find those little niche things that can be done to break something, I think this will really really smooth it out nicely and just make sure we get the right XP drops from the start. You know, we're making sure that everything is going to be going the way it should be going right from when it is made live in game.
Yeah. And that prevents any other huge rebalances like we had with Invention.
Exactly.
Though I don't know if we'll be seeing final XP rates in the beta, because that was, I think, one of the largest issues with Invention that caused so many issues in the first 48 hours of it. So
that's right. So that's why I hope that they do make sure we've got all the XP rates right from the start.
Yeah. And, I mean, on the grand scheme of things, tweaking XP rates for this, you know, shouldn't take I mean, you put three people on it, and it should be able to be done with inside a week, maybe a week and a half.
Mm.
So hopefully before the beta.
Yeah.
Question was asked regarding augmentable pickaxes. Tier 90 will be augmentable for sure. Possibly tier 80, but definitely not tier 70 pickaxes. And as we already mentioned, tier 90 armor and weapons will be Elder Rune. So.
Yeah, that sort of got me, because, I mean, we can the crystal pickaxe is tier 70. We can augment that. The dragon pickaxe is tier 60. We can augment that. So the tier 70 one, yeah, I can sort of understand that. I don't understand why not doing a tier 80. So you're stepping up. You've got your augmented tier 60, an augmented tier 70, an augmented tier 80, and an augmented tier 90.
Yeah.
I don't know why they would. I mean, I totally understand not doing the tier 70 because you've already got the crystal pickaxe for that. I don't understand not doing it on the tier 80 personally.
Yeah, because we can already augment lots of those level of items in game. I mean, we have the Sun Spear, for example, which is like level 78. So why not let us augment something skilling related that's a couple levels higher?
That's it.
So we'll just have to wait and see on that. But overall, this was very, very positive looking here for me. So yeah. Anything else here on your note sheet that we might have missed? I think we got most of
it. I'm just looking over it quickly now. It looks good. And obviously, as I said, you know, cutting out that elking and just generating gold is going to be a good thing. One thing was the chick axe that they developed in game quickly for us. I want the chick axe. That was people going, oh, you know, a chicken axe. And then all of a sudden, I don't know who it was, but they put the chicken as the pickaxe. And I thought, how quick and how brilliant was it that they were just bang, bang, were able to implement that in the middle of the stream, just from a comment from the listeners. So I found that funny.
Yeah, me too.
The other thing they said, no quest unlocks for anything.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I think quests are such an integral and unique part of RuneScape. I like to see, you know, things locked behind, you know, not everything, but sort of maybe certain areas or something.
There needs to be something for people to strive for.
That's right. Having that goal, okay, I've got to do this and get here, get this quest done so I can unlock this. Yeah, not unlock the bars and that or the plots necessarily, but maybe a better area. You know, to get to a spot to mine and things. You know, I hope they relook at that. And, like everyone strove to get to Priftinus because of how good an area that was and the mining areas and things there, easy to get to rune rocks, easy to get to Addy rocks and things. So I'm hoping, you know, that they relook at that and do reward questers for, you know, getting there. That's what we want, unique rewards in quests. I'm sick of XP drops. I like quests for the quest itself, but I love having a unique reward, something, hey, I've earned this in game by doing this, not just, oh yeah, I get 50k XP for this, or I get 150k XP for that, you know. So yeah, that was just the only other one that I had written down there that we didn't do.
You know, that actually brings up an idea I had while watching this. The mining guild needs to be made relevant with this.
Yes, that's right. I'm hoping that we'll have, you know, the mining guild will open up more down there, the mining rocks and such down there. That's where we'll get a lot of some of these higher level ones, and we'll need. Yeah, and that's where, okay, you can have some of those rocks in out-of-the-way areas, but if you have a quest to unlock an area in the mining guild, which is a lot easier and closer to get to, that's where we need to be looking at that type of thing.
And I actually have an idea for that. They have been talking about doing a Virago quest. do the Virago quest and make that the quest unlock, the extension of the mining guild, because what you do is it will end up being below the mining guild, but it's actually attached to the Living Rock Caverns, which is close to Virago. So
exactly,
do a Virago quest, tie that in with the Mining Guild and the Living Rock Caverns expansion.
Yep.
So that's a great idea.
Symbiosis between all areas of the game.
Exactly. All right. Well, that's the mining and smithing rework. This was actually a very fun stream to watch, and I'm glad that we got this out before Christmas. So, all right. Now, this next update, or rather blog post, is either going to make people happy or it's going to sink people into depression. So we were told that Jagex was finally going to provide light on how skilling pets are unlocked. Well, that post is here, and it is utterly astounding at some of the things that you can expect. So skilling pets are split into two methods of unlock. First is a time-based method and an XP-based method. The time-based method relies on server tick, and the skills that go based on this method are agility, fire making, fishing, hunter, mining, thieving, and wood cutting. Of note for this personally, I have got the divination pet, the fishing pet, and the wood cutting pet out of this basket. Then everything else is XP-based, and that's construction, cooking, crafting, dungeoneering, farming, fletching, herb lore, invention, runecrafting, and smithing. And of these, I have got farming, herb lore, invention, and runecrafting.
I just want to also mention farming Shane got day one.
Yeah. And so because of that, I will talk about the XP method first as to how this is calculated. And you guys will just see how absurd the chance was to get that farming pet on day one from what I did. So the XP-based method factors in the XP that you earn before any other bonuses. So that means, you know, skilling outfits, bonus XP, clan avatars, and so on and so forth. And then once they have that base XP, there's a modifier for each skill that was assigned during development of the skilling pets. And the modifiers are listed in the blog post. The modifier for farming is 12, whereas the modifier for herb lore is 45, and the modifier for runecrafting is 28. So factoring this in with a modifier of 12, you take the base XP earned and the right modifier. Now, you might wonder, what did I do for that? Well, I checked a papaya tree. That's how I got my farming skill pet. So that is 6148 XP before anything happens. So what you do in that case is you divide the base XP by the modifier. So 6148 divided by 12, which is roughly 512. So then you take that and multiply it by your virtual level, which for me is, of course, 120. I don't have 200 mil, so I don't add 200 to that. So then you take that number, which is 61,480, and divide it by 50 million. So taking that number gives you an absolutely absurd rate of, you ready for this? You ready for this?
We are.
Okay. That gives you an absolutely absurd number of 0.12296%. chance of getting the farming skill pet using that method.
So yeah, that's 0.1%, people.
0.12%.
So, yes.
And crazy. I got this on day one.
Day one doing a papaya tree. So anyone looking for luck, yeah, just borrow Shane's horseshoe.
You know, when I saw this, I just started laughing because
you've been. I mean, yeah, I looked at that because and most of the pets that you have got have been the harder ones to get to. And you know, I look at the pets you've got, and I said, Shane's got another one. He gets them all under 5 mil XP. You know, and a lot of struggling. Like I got the invention pet. Took me like 130 mil. The theme.
And I'm not even level 99 yet.
54 mil exactly. So, yes.
And, level plays a role in it. So, of course, with invention, the higher you can go, the better, but it's also got a higher modifier. An example they give here for construction is when you're constructing mahogany tables is 14 out of 78,005 or 78,125. And if you take that into a percentage, that's roughly the same as the farming pet actually.
But that's only if you're 200
1%
mil in
in
construction
construction.
too. Yeah.
So, it's pretty rare, stupidly rare for that example. Let's see. And another thing I'm not sure of with this is actually, oh, that's why I got Rue, because I was doing one of those massive pushes with the soul altar. And if you charge the soul altar up all the way, which I was doing, you get more XP from it. So you have a higher chance of getting the pet.
Actually, that's an interesting thing because I'm down chasing Rue at the moment, the rift in the GE. But when I do go for it seriously,
You should do the soul altar.
I might do the soul altar. I just do nature runes generally, but yeah, chasing the pet, I might do soul runes.
Yeah. Herblore, Herblore one has to probably be the rarest one because I'm not I have no idea what level I was at the time, but what I was doing in that case, I was cleaning a toad flax.
And that made me sick too. I've done about 25 mil herblore chasing the pet and still got nothing. Making the highest level potions I can, and you clean a toad flax and get it. Now people know why I mean about Borrow Shane's horseshoe.
I don't mean to be gloating here, but it's just utterly
Hey,
absurd that I
yeah.
have this kind of luck with
But
this.
that's yeah, and that's it. It's RNG. It's the roll of the dice, and it can happen. People win Tasslotto out there, and these type of things. That's what
Toad
RNG. Yeah,
Flax
that's
is
what
8 XP.
luck-based things happen. Yeah. Oh, the chance on that is probably 0.0001.
Yeah, let's just assume for the fact I was level 110 Herblore because I'm level 112 right now and it would have been around that time. So it was 8 XP and the multiplier for Herblore is 45. So we're already down into the decimals because of that. And I was level 110, so that's 19.5. Now if we divide that by 50 million, yeah. That ready for this number?
Yep.
0.00039%.
Well, I was over. No, I only said 3 0.0s. It's actually 4 point zeros.
Yep.
Wow, that is amazing.
Now on to the time-based methods. So this one, of course, relies on the server tick rates and basically, what they do with this is they take the time value and then multiply it by your virtual level in the skill, then divide by 50 million. And if you have 200 mil in the total XP in the skill, we add a flat 50 to your virtual level while doing the calculation. So, for example, woodcutting ivy at level 99 would be 4 times 99 divided by 50 million, giving you a 99 out of 12,500,000 chance of getting that pet.
Yep.
Now, this one is for thieves who frequents our friend's chat. I believe he got his thieving pet after many millions of XP by doing the elf workers. Yes, I think that was the method.
Yes, and he's a 200 miller.
Right. And this explains why elf workers are not the best way if you're going for the thieving pet, because elf thieving, each time you get one of those coin drops from them, is only 2 ticks. So it's almost as bad as you can get from that. I don't think there's anything in game that takes 1 tick to do on that matter. So 2 is probably the best it can be. So, and that makes these pets, I think, inherently more rare, the ones that are based around time. So,
Yep.
anyways.
Now, I'll just let everyone, just a reminder, it's all worked on base XP. So anything that gives bonuses, such as your the outfits that they have, your clan avatars, any boosters, do not count. It's only off the base XP.
Yeah. And, you know, that's, I guess, a good way of training things in higher baskets of XP. But even then, that doesn't help you for the time-based methods. So,
yeah.
That's agility, divination, fire making, fishing, hunter, mining, thieving, and wood cutting. So, and that kind of makes sense because wood cutting, fishing, mining, thieving, hunter, fire making, divination, agility, these are all things that people grind in games, so they didn't want it to be XP based.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. Let's see. Did they mention dungeoneering? Ah, yeah, slight difference when it comes to dungeoneering. They divide the base XP amount that you get at the end of a dungeon by the party size difficulty that you or your party leader selected at the beginning of the dungeon or dungeon run. So, for example, if you had selected a 5-player size dungeon at the start and earned 100,000 XP before bonuses, the base XP value in the formula would actually be 20,000. So,
and again, that's that again shows that dungeoneering is a mini game because it's different to all the other actual skills.
Yep, that's right. So, whew, I don't know. I got a good laugh out of these, but I know there's lots of people who are very saddened by this. So,
but that and that's the thing because now people go, "Oh, it's too hard. It's too hard." I mean, that's why I like that mystery behind it. But
yeah, me too.
I think that's quite good, and I want them to be ultra rare to get because I don't want, you know, in a year's time to have every single player to be able to have all those pets. You should be working hard for it.
Yep, as I said, I agree.
I started chasing my invention pet. I was at 120 invention. I was just over the 85 million, I was 228 million when I finally got it. I maxed out 200 mil, and then I reset my timer just to see how long it took, and it was an extra 28 mil on top to unlock that pet for me. You think about it, you sort of think, wow, that's a ridiculous amount of XP, but hey, that's what the luck base is, and it's good that it's that rare, and you feel better. Oh, it's now unlocked. Look how long I've taken and such, and it's a great feeling when you do finally get it.
Yep. All right. Well, that pretty much wraps up our RS segment for the week. We're going to move on to a couple of questions right now. So the first one here is from Tycho. Hello, RSBNB. Christmas is at our doorstep, and as per usual, we're reminded that this is the time of giving and charity. Getting families together, visiting lonely friends, and giving a stranger a present is a truly amazing thing to witness every year. Now, my questions to the Farmtastic Shade and his sidekick are, one, if Jagex were to hire you to make one big event throughout December for the community, what would it be? It will preferably be something enjoyed by the four roles of RuneScape, PVMers, Skillers, Adventurers, and Bankstanders. Two, who will be the luckiest real-life person this Christmas be having you in their lives? I know you are preparing a big surprise for this lucky person, but we can always pray that this once that they aren't listening to this person, to this podcast. Merry Christmas and have a happy new year from Tycho, the elven elfborn of the elves. All right, community event, Christmas. You know, I think for me it would have to go back to the Well of Goodwill and, you know, just being, I think, a good area for everyone to gather around. Now, I don't want to outright say that we need to go back to the beach or the Lumbridge Crater for this, but I think that was one of the best Christmas events that we had for the community because it had things for everyone. It had, you know, the skilling elements. It had the combat elements as well. And it had the ice skating and the snowboarding. And that was just really, really fun. So if I was to do a Christmas event, in addition to the quest that we had this year, which was pretty good, I would go back to something like we had in 2015, personally. Except I would add the Well of Goodwill to it because I think that's something that we should all strive to do a bit at Christmas is a bit of charitable giving. So that's what I'd like to see for the optimal Christmas event in RuneScape, something where everyone can come together and be a community. So
yeah, I agree. Firstly, if Jagex were to hire me to make one big event, I would refer them to a psychiatrist. But if I were to make it, again, as you said, I really enjoyed the Snowvalord or the Snowvalode we had in 2014, I think that one was, or 2015, where you had a bit of everything. As you said, it was the Lumbridge Crater. You had skilling, you had a bit of combat there. As long as it tied in with a good quest like we had this year, I think that year was just more of a grind. We didn't really get an actual quest, I need a good quest like they had this year, and then tied in. And this year is actually quite good. They could probably have done a little bit more for the PVM side over here. Maybe have some combat dummies or little things like that. Maybe a really rare chance on if you're using these things to unlock a nice little Christmas cosmetic for people to aim for, but. I like the way they've implemented it in the GE this year, just because they did make that change to the GE, and now that it is sort of it looks so empty. Now you just got the big bank in the middle and nothing out to the sides. I like the way
they. It's almost like a secondary gathering place to the crater.
It is, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I've always liked the crater as being sort of that holiday event area. So I would keep it at Lumbridge, and I would do something. I totally agree. That was exactly my thoughts when you said that you sort of stole my thunder there, because I was thinking the same thing, that sort of 2014, 2015, where we had the Snowvalord. So you had that combat side. You had all the little skills with your snowboarding and your ice skating and your snowball throwing and the cooking things down there. It was a good little area that you could just go down there and just do a bunch of stuff. And also make it the chance, not to use your bonus XP filling urns and all that like they've done this year, but the chance to unlock the pets at those things, I think, is a good thing as well, because a lot of people do pet hunt. So if there's a skill that you don't have a pet in and you want to give it a try, you can go down there and do that. So, yeah.
All right. Sounds like we got a bit of unity on that one. And I think the only thing that could make it better, in effect, be the cherry on the top would be, like we said, a portal to go back and replay those past holiday events for, just replay them. You don't necessarily need to get the reward for them.
No, just play through them.
Yeah.
Just one thing on your Well of Goodwill. I think part of the problem with that is the real world value of the money they're putting in, and that's why they're not allowed to do that anymore.
Yeah, I agree. Mm. I agree, and that's also why we partially saw the change in charitable strategy from Jagex away from mega Well of Goodwills towards more of a focused giving, if you will. So
yeah,
and that's fair, I think. So. All right, the second part, luckiest person to have us for Christmas. Do you want to go
no
first?
No one's lucky to have me.
for me, I have to go back to basics for this one, and it's something that I hope that everyone who plays RuneScape will need to do, is that... It comes down to, at the end of the day, these holiday seasons, whether or not you celebrate Christmas or whether it's, Thanksgiving leading up to it. But I have to say it's got to be family. And, a close second to that is some very good friends and whatnot. So
actually, for the first time in about 5 or 6 years, I'll actually be spending Christmas Day with my parents. So that'll be fun.
Yeah, that's good. And I mean, we're also doing a couple of different things this year as well. And, at the end of the day, it all comes down to, I think, seeing who is most important to you, and everyone is going to do that at the end of the day, right? So that's what it's got to be, I think. It's got to be number one, family, and number two, the close friends that you're involved with. So. Thank you, Tycho, for that question. All right. Next one from Choto. Would you care to give this a read?
Yes. He says, "Hoods, fellow noobs. It is I, Tycho's RNG thief. One, we saw a forum thread by Timbo explaining the mathematics of skilling pets. I, for instance, didn't know your chance of obtaining a pet increased drastically with virtual levels. Do you think it's a good idea, a good thing, that the drops rates increase when you reach max XP in a skill? Also, how is your RNG? Have you received any pets? And two, according to you, is it good that they implement new tradable armors? Wouldn't it be better if the T70, 80, and 90 equipment were untradable? Three, bonus question. Any thoughts on the internet neutrality law?
Chodo is a secret producer for RSBNB Update that he leads us so nicely into tech news.
So, the chances, did you know that they gave you virtual levels?
I had assumed, I didn't know they were actual virtual levels. I thought they were thresholds at 99, 120, and 200 mil. I didn't know it expanded as you went through. So that was
new to me. Yeah, I was the same. Yeah.
You know, I think it's, I think we already talked about this. It's good they released it like this. And, you know, it's good for transparency of the game. That's what I got to say about it. RNG based, 7 pets. How about you?
I have, just looking at it now, Ramsey, Jemmy, Willow, Gordy, Bubbles, Ace, Malcolm, Rocky, Crab, Ralph, and then the new Wallace and Morty. So what's that? It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 of the pets so far, and then 2 of the combat ones.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The best one was Ace. I was fishing. That was when Menaphos was happening. So I was fishing at Menaphos, hoping for the pet down there. And when you were there, the little imps, the implings used to pop out. And just grabbed one of those, and all of a sudden you get this message pop up, you have unlocked Ace, the hunter pet. So I did that in probably 100k XP, got the hunter pet.
That's nice.
That was my luckiest one. Actually, no, and the Slayer pet, I got that on day of release as well.
Oh, good. Yeah, and I mean, that could also be a hard to get one, I think, as well.
From what I hear, I mean, I thought the Slayer pet was one of the easiest ones. I actually remember when they did the remodeling of the Dagonoth Kings.
Mm-hmm.
I got a task for them, so I thought, oh, beauty, because they're doing the release. So I made a little video. So I went down there and did half the task before the update, and then half the task afterwards. So when I went back afterwards, managed to get the Slayer pet, fantastic, and also got Rex, the Dagonoth, one of the Dagonoth King's pets as well,
oh, wow,
all in the same Slayer task. So I had a very lucky day that one.
Very nice. To give you some perspective on the pets that I've got, 13.3 million XP since I've got, or including getting Bubbles the fishing pet, 1.8 million XP to get Woody.
Still haven't got Woody.
23.3 million XP, though I got Herbert long before I reached 23.3 million XP, probably more like 15 million, give or take. Let's see, Rue, only 4.5 million XP, and I'm still not level 99 in that. Brains, the farming pet, 11 million XP gained so far, but, you know, once again, that was on first day, so.
Yeah, like, that was done in, like, 30,000 XP?
No, 7K XP, because it was at the beginning 7K. Of the farming run.
Oh, that's right, that's right at the start, so there you go.
So, yeah.
Oh, my God.
What's the divination pet's name?
Willow
from divination, 2.2 million XP.
Actually, Willow was another one that I got accidentally. Just went down there for an hour to get some energy to make my divine charges, and it just popped up. I thought, oh wow, okay, wasn't expecting that. And it's funny, the ones you hunt for, you don't get.
Yep.
And
the ones you're just doing it, you do. When I got level 85 invention, so probably about a million XP ago, maybe 1.5 mil XP ago, give or take. So that put me at around 17 million XP for Malcolm, the invention pet. So,
yes. You know I don't like you for that one after all. Yeah, although I have it now, so I don't care anymore because I've got it. But yeah, it's just like, it's funny. I took like 130+ million and you get it in 17 million.
And I'm not even level 99 yet.
And you're not even level 99, that's right. Okay, the tradable armors, do you like them being tradable or do you think they should be untradable?
I think what we got in the design document is pretty good, how the final levels of armor is going to be tradable at high tiers, and then people can just decorate them for XP. I think that's a great way to go selling the intermediate steps along the way, because there needs to be a way to make money with smithing in the rework.
No, that's mine. I would have hated this if this was untradeable, because the whole idea of the rework is to bring skills back up to money making methods, and this is one of those things that, you know, smithers should be able to make money and sell it to those who don't want to sit there and take the time. You take the time to make the stuff, you should be able to sell it. They also talked about the overload style mechanic that they're looking at. They haven't done anything.
Oh,
about
yeah, that wasn't
yet.
In the stream, was it? Camp.
No, because, yeah, they basically haven't done anything about it yet. And it is going to be untradeable. Again, I don't like that idea. Yeah, I think it needs to be a money-making method, and we should be able to make them to sell. If they do want to have an untradeable version at 99, have sort of a slightly less powerful one at level 95 that we can make to sell onto PVMers.
Yeah. And, you know, I would actually say that if they want to make the overload method tradable, what they should do instead is they should start dropping things inside of the various bossing instances, like even God Wars 1, for example, and Nex at tier 80, they should start dropping things there that are little attachments that you can add on to the God Swords and whatnot, and that'll bring it up to, you know, a tier 85 maybe or a tier 87 weapon. But when you get these things, you need to use your smithing level to smith them onto the weapon, and that is another way of doing something that's untradeable, and it makes that weapon untradeable at the end of the day, and it is truly your weapon. So I think that would be a good way to go if they were wanting to add something untradeable to it. And I've long been an advocate of, you know, having PVM drop something and then needing to use smithing to add on to it to make a weapon great.
Yes. Because I hate the fact that they just drop outright the completed thing. I've always thought it should drop the primary component, which needs to be refined through smithers and then redone. And just as we said before, just have that marriage between skilling and combat.
Yeah, definitely. Because, I mean, it's nice to get one thing all at a time, but on the other hand, we have so many iconic weapons in game that, you know, people might want to use for, you know, just a way to kind of, I guess, to satisfy their own ambitions. Like, take the original Dragon Longsword, for example. That's a useless weapon in game, but it's so iconic. Shouldn't there be some kind of use for that maybe at level 80? Or 85.
Yes. Yeah, he'd love to be able to do something. I mean, I was lucky enough to get one of the Golden God Swords, and I got the keepsake key, and that is my melee override, because it just, I love the look of that.
Yeah.
When I first started the game, that was the aim. I needed to get a God Sword. It was the Saradomin one back then, and it was just
which golden one did you get?
I got the Saradomin
gold. Oh, I got the Bandos one. I wanted the Saradomin one.
Yeah, it was the last day too. I'm sitting there and I'm cursing he who shall not be named, who has like 1,000 accounts to steal all that stuff. And then on the last day, I thought, I've got nothing, all this, and I've just gone bang it. You have won. I've got, yes, and I've opened it up, and it was the Saradomin Golden God Sword, and I was very excited.
I wish I got that one. and, you know, what we're talking about here, making older weapons relevant again, specifically ones with special attacks, is something that has already been done in game, because we have the Abyssal Whip at tier 70, and that was taken to tier 75 by the Vine Whip and taken to tier 80 by the Wildy Vine thing as well. So it's not unprecedented to take a weapon up, you know, that many tiers. So it could definitely be done.
Yeah, and as you said, have the primary dropped in fighting, and that the perfect for the God Swords. Have that attachment dropped in God Wars 1. You can attach it and you increase it up to a level 80 or level 85 weapon that has. And again, it can have a niche use, you know, something that's but it's got to be useful and just allow us to get out there. Because, I mean, they were a great-looking sword. That was – it was when I first started, it was the Abyssal Whip and the Sarah-Diamond Godsword were the two things you aimed for.
Yeah, and I mean, not only because of how the Godswords look, those old Godswords, but their special attacks are still decent in modern-day RuneScape.
Yeah, yep.
So why not? But that could be maybe an auxiliary feature of the Mining and Smithing update. Mm. So.
And again, they don't have to implement these all at once. These can be, you know, we get this in, get it all right, and then down the track, okay, now we can start looking at extra add-ons. And that, again, is where we're saying taking it to level 120 would have made sense because you could have these add-ons needed to be created at that higher level. You know, you need to be an expert smither to be
now,
able to do that.
Wouldn't that have been something?
You've got to do it at 105.
At 105, you can create the add-on to take your level 70 Godsword up to tier 85, except you're going to need something from the God Wars dungeon, you're going to need something from the Sarah-Diamond boss, and you're going to need something from the smithing skill, and you combine all those three things together at level 105, and voila.
Yep.
That's actually a great idea.
Hmm.
But I mean,
and that's it. And that's why I don't understand why, you know, because they said, oh yeah, it doesn't make sense to take it to that because, you know, we're not doing armors and weapons above T90, or, you know, they won't go above T99. And that's, it just made no sense. And I sort of lost a bit of confidence in the mod who actually said that. I thought, you know, you're supposed to be a creative developer and you're thinking so linear. It's got to be armor and weapons and that's it. No. There is so much more that this game can do.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, just to highlight that, there are other things that we do in the smithing skill already. We create, for example, the Malevolent Armor from Rise of the Six. We also create cannonballs. We create darts and knives, those tips for fletching with the smithing skill. We also, create pickaxes and hatchets. So it's not just armor and weapons.
Mm, exactly.
All right. Thank you, Chodo. And your bonus question leads us nicely into tech news. And I'll just say, rather than plugging where you can send questions in, I'll say that our next questions topic is going to be in January because of our next two episodes coming up are special episodes. So on to tech news we go. All right. So this week on the 14th, yesterday, Thursday, in the United States, there was a landmark ruling by the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, which governs basically anything that is electronic and is used to communicate in the United States. They ruled that the 2015 applied net neutrality rules are to be struck down. Now, I'm going to start off from the very beginning here and provide a bit of an outline of what net neutrality purports to be and why it's important. So basically, when you go to a website like runescape.com or google.com, you create a connection with that website and you send your web browser. So Chrome sends a request saying, I want to start a web search for this various term. And then that makes its way to Google servers. Google servers executes it and returns the final web page with the results on it. Pretty simple in the grand scheme of things. And that's a really simple request on the internet. Now, over the number of years, we have seen what the internet is used for expand exponentially, you know, with the release of YouTube and Netflix, for example. Those are constant, always on streaming services that provide a stream of data to you, and a very fast and very heavy stream of data to you at that, you know, so much so that an HD stream of video can take anywhere between 8 and 10 megabits per second of bandwidth. So it uses lots of bandwidth to stream that 4K or 1080p movie from Netflix. And what net neutrality aims to do is prevent internet service providers, ISPs in the US, from artificially throttling Netflix to maybe instead put their own video service ahead of Netflix or YouTube, for example. And this is largely where most of the outcry is because there's a fear that the telecom companies in the United States will start throttling these things and making people pay extra, you know, to access Netflix or maybe extra to access social media or extra to access websites like Spotify and YouTube and the like. Basically, the fear is that you could end up with a situation where the internet is put into tiered packages. And this fear has already been realized in Portugal because there is a network provider in Portugal that is mobile, and it segments its internet packages up into messaging, so WhatsApp, Skype, iMessage, Google Hangouts, social media, video, music, email, and cloud. And you need to pay a little bit extra if you want to be able to access all of these different features of the internet. So that's the fear of what could happen without net neutrality. Now, going back to February of 2015, the FCC, under the Obama administration, voted and mandated that in order for carriers to have to enforce this net neutrality rule, they would need to be classed under something called Title II of the Communications Act of 1934, making them common carriers, which puts them in the same boat as telephone companies. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I think that using a law from 1934 to class something in 2017 is a bit of a cop-out, and we'll probably have some unintended side effects along the way, right? So
yeah, you were explaining to me before the show, and
yes, it looks like this was a good thing to begin with, but in reality, there were actually a lot of unintended consequences with this. Now, I'm not saying that the overturn of this rule was a good thing. There is something like net neutrality needed, but there should be a better way of achieving it. Let that be known that I say that. Now, two of the biggest pitfalls from this are that, you know, if you look at any modern internet provider in the developed world, there's a good chance they also provide cable TV. And if they provide cable TV, they're in the situation of saying that if you watch X hours of TV and you have an internet plan with us, we could charge you for bandwidth on that. Because most people don't realize it, but TV today is delivered over the same fiber networks to the nearest distribution node as the internet is. So that's one potential pitfall that could have happened even if net neutrality was in place. And secondly, what net neutrality did is it forced every internet service provider in the United States to get a broadcast license. Now, you might not think this is a huge issue for someone like Comcast, but right now, the government in the U.S. is rather benevolent in terms of protecting the rights of people to have a relative amount of safety in the world, I think. But it might not be that way in 10 or 20 or 50 years. And if the government wanted to, with these broadcast licenses, they could force internet service providers to censor certain parts of the internet if they really wanted to under the same legislation. That's unintended consequence number one. Unintended consequence number two is that it really affects small rural internet service providers, because if you go to middle America and you go to a small town, they don't have the infrastructure to have, you know, a cable internet provider. But what they do have is they do have a few cell phone towers. So what someone in that area can do is they can set up a local wireless internet ISP based on the local cell phone providers or even satellite for a decent amount of cost. But under net neutrality, they're forced to get a broadcast license, thus raising the cost. So these were some of the unintended consequences of net neutrality in the U.S. So yes, while we need to be worried about the large companies and whether or not they're going to throttle, you know, various services like Netflix, YouTube, or Skype, or Discord, there were many more unintended consequences with the regulatory setup that were in place before. And, you know, I think one thing that everyone is overlooking is that, you know, Netflix claims to be on the side of net neutrality, but it is that very open internet that existed from 1995 to 2015 that allowed Netflix to start up and prosper. So it's a little bit hypocritical on Netflix's stance as well regarding this. And at the end of the day, there needs to be a modern solution built in 2017, not just in the U.S., but around the world, that ensures consumer protection, ensures that the internet can't be censored by a government or large providers like Facebook or Google if they would ever want to do that, and also enables oh, that's nice. I just activated my Siri somehow by doing this. I found something on the web. Can't be censored by government or large. Okay, that's nice. But, you know, and it ultimately also comes down to ensuring that small ISPs and small businesses online are able to compete and have the same chance that Netflix did and that Google did. So, yes, while we need to have something like net neutrality, it's good that this initial plan was struck down. And hopefully, going forward, something else will be built and put up in its place that covers what net neutrality should be and more. So, you know, this is a bit of an alternate perspective on it. I see a lot on the internet about how the striking down of the net neutrality rules as they were was a really bad thing and it's going to kill the internet. But at the end of the day, I don't see anything about the actual regulations that were in place regarding that, which is, you know, something I think you got to do if you're advocating a cause is you got to understand both sides really well, which a lot of the articles on the internet do not. So that's what's happening in the state of net neutrality. And one final thing on this, I'll just say, is that it's something that everyone needs to watch out for. So, I don't know what the situation there is in Australia, but here in Canada, we tend to mirror the US pretty close.
Yeah, no, I mean, our internet, I think we're 78th in the world for quality of internet. We are pretty poor here. But basically, they've started rolling out something called the NBN, the National Broadband Network, to get us onto fiber. Unfortunately, the previous government was going to do it fiber to the house. When they lost and the next government got in, of course, they can never follow exactly what the previous government did.
Right.
So they decided to go, we'll just go fiber to the node and use your copper to the house. That has been causing a lot of problems. A lot of people have issues with dropouts and things like that. But basically, what they do, they offer three variants. So you get your basic package, which, yeah, it comes at, I think it's one up and five down. You can pay an extra $20 and sort of get your 25 up, 50 down, or you can go the high-end package, which is a hundred down and 50 up. We were told we don't need gigabit. No one uses gigabit. So yeah, the head of the NBN said that about Australia, because obviously copper's never going to be able to run that type of thing. They've just stopped the rollout of the NBN over what they call the HFC, a hybrid fiber and copper distribution, which is what I'm on. I was about to sign up for it and found out, no, don't do it because they are having a lot of issues and they've got to go back and redo it all. So the cost is actually blown out to more than what it was going to be if they just did the fiber to house initially, which is very frustrating because the whole reason was the new government stopped it because it's going to cost too much money. Their new system is actually blown out. I think it's already like 50% over what it was going to cost just to hook it the right way in the first place, and would have brought us up to, you know, what internet should be in, you know, in those top sort of 10 or
right.
20 countries would have been up in there.
And see, this is a major thing here is that it sounds like it's suffering from the weight of the government run program. And you know, this goes back to net neutrality specifically in the US. It is really hard in the US to start a new ISP. Even Google is finding that with their Google Fiber projects. So that's why there needs to be less regulation on starting these ISPs and more on, you know, just modernizing the whole view of the telecom industry as a whole, because it's not going away. It just needs to be modernized, and you just need to have the will to make it happen. So, and the final point I'll make with this is that if Netflix, Google, and Facebook, or whoever else is at stake here, wanted to, they do tons of lobbying in the US regarding this. If they wanted to change the rules and have something like net neutrality baked in, into the regulatory setup, they could press all the right monetary buttons and make it happen, but they're not. So that kind of shows where they're at with this.
Yeah.
And you can read more about this too. Last month I put an article out on Informer at informer.rsmeme.com that goes into this, entitled, Net Neutrality, the Tip of the Iceberg, and, goes into why we need to actually have more than just net neutrality right now. So.
Nice plug.
Thank you.
Sorry, I had to get in as a throwback. Well, listeners will know that one.
Well, speaking of other things that are nice, Twitter is rolling out Threads this week in an update they call Nice Threads. So what they're effectively doing is they're adding TweetStorm support to Twitter so that you'll be able to chain multiple tweets together in one large thread. Of course, each of those tweets now can be up to 280 characters. So the idea behind this is that initially things were done with the regular reply to make this happen. And, you know, people started just doing it on Twitter en masse. So, and they have incorporated it into their service, just like the retweet and the at reply and the hashtags are all examples of this. And, you know, I find this interesting because, you know, Twitter is in an interesting place for a platform because it feels like, you know, it's something that is used by almost everyone. But at the same point, it's not that novel. And the platform for an individual is kind of, it has kind of just flopped, if you know what I mean. So I don't think Threads are the update to reinflate that Twitter balloon for the end user. It just doesn't feel like it. So once again, it feels like too little too late. Like they're a year and a half behind to where they should have been.
I mean, my point on something like this is you got to sit there, type it, and then you got to do that, and then do the next one, and then do the next one. Why not just send an email out? But I mean, at least they're trying new things. You know, you've got to give them kudos for that. Yes, it's probably too little, too late. But you know, I think they're trying new things and see how it goes. And you know, you throw enough crap against the wall, and something will stick.
Yeah. We'll just have to watch next week for certain on this because they're also implementing a new rule set where they're actually going to look at what people are doing off the platform to determine if they should be banned or not. So they're approaching the same level of creepiness as Facebook in this regard. So
yeah, I'm sort of in two minds on that sort of censorship because I mean, obviously there is some stuff that is just abhorrent and should be just censored outright, but where do you draw the line? And you know, it's always right. It's always a very hard area to sort of
do you want a company in San Francisco making that decision for people in Portugal or people in Russia?
Exactly. Yeah.
We'll have to wait and see how this goes. And I mean, I don't know if this is going to make more people go back to Twitter. I personally, for RSBNB, have never had to send out more than a single tweet. And, it was something that we worked on for a long time was getting everything below 140 characters that, you know, hitting 280 now isn't a problem. So threads aren't even needed, but nonetheless, it'll be interesting to see, where this goes and if anyone, jumps on this. So. All right. And our
wait and see.
Final piece of tech news relates to Amazon. Amazon is actually going to now start selling Apple TV and Google Chromecast on their stores. Previously, Amazon would not sell its competing products on the stores. And it's been this way for the past 2 years because the thought by Amazon is that this was competing with its Amazon Fire TV product. The Amazon spokeswoman said this past Thursday that I can confirm now that we are assorting Apple TV and Chromecast. And, you know, it's also very interesting here because Amazon attempted to force YouTube to play on their most recent Echo TV product that had a video screen in it. But Google shut that down as well because, of course, Google was shut out of the Amazon store for the Chromecast features and whatnot. So it's nice to see Amazon making nice here when, you know, when you think about it, Amazon is perhaps the largest retailer online today. And if they are limiting Apple and Google, what does that say about Amazon's own practices and the faith in their ability to compete? So I think that this is ultimately good for consumers, because otherwise you would have to go to the Apple Store or the Google Play Store to purchase these devices. But we'll have to wait and see if this fosters more cooperation between Amazon and Google, because if you have an Amazon Echo right now, you can't use YouTube videos on it. So
yeah, and maybe that's part of the reason. You know, like, we'll start selling your products, but we want access to this, and it's, you know, a bit of give and take on things. Yeah. So it, as you said, it can only be good for our consumers.
Yep. And you know, I think, you know, Echo was the first one out there, but I think Google's products are now starting to become more mainstream than Amazon's in that regard, just because so many more people have Android phones and they just sync so much nicer with the Android experience. So,
yep. And even in retail stores over here, Apple TV and Google Chromecast and Chromecast Ultra, you know, sell at every electronics store. I've never seen the Amazon one anywhere.
Yeah, so there you go. Glad that Amazon is doing this. And, you know,
yes,
this also goes back to modern competition on the internet, that, you know, if we're going to be talking about net neutrality, we should also bake in provisions like this that prevent a company like Amazon from being monopolistic against Google and Apple. So
it's
one of the steps we can go.
That's what I was telling you beforehand. Amazon Australia just released here a couple of weeks ago, actually Black Friday, and, you know, a lot of their products were sold in stores, things like the Kindle and all that, and all the complaints they got because people could walk into a store and buy a lot of the products cheaper than what Amazon was selling for. You know, everyone was all excited, and, you know, they were $500 more on some Samsung TVs. The Amazon, the Kindle, which is their own thing, is $99 on their store and $79 in the retail stores here. And, you know, sort of, it always pays to shop around. Yes, they are the largest one there and probably the easiest one, but, you know, always shop around, because, you know, while they're the biggest, they're not always the best price-wise.
Yep, and that goes back to Shopping 101, I think.
Yep.
All right. Well, that wraps up tech news. We're going to head on into our Skill of the Month update, which is the Constitution Skill of the Month, which has been surprising in the level of activity that we have seen so far. So much so that Optimaniac is still sitting here in first place with 7.1 million XP gained. Second place is Sorensen with 4.7 million XP. And in third place is Upernasius with 4.1 million XP gained.
Yeah, that actually surprises me.
Yeah, a bit of a lead change. You were in second for a bit. You're now in third. Sorensen has passed you in the most recent days. Previously, he was in fourth. So he has made a great comeback here. So it'll be interesting watching the final 2 weeks of the month here to figure out what exactly is going on with this. And, you know, people always say the Constitution skill of the months are boring, but in reality, Constitution is probably the best combat skill of the month to have.
Yes.
And it was a good time to have it because of the combat pets.
Exactly. And that's, I mean, Constitution to me is probably the best combat skill because it incorporates everything. So whether you're a major, a melee, or a ranger, you're going to be able to compete in it. And just going on to Sorensen, I know he's spending a lot of time down at the God Wars dungeons at the moment trying to unlock all those, what are they called, those new task sets that they've got down there. I've got him on my friends list, obviously, through the RR Man and such, and, you know, getting a lot of pop-ups as he's unlocking each of the different new rune score things that you need.
Oh, okay, for the achievement hunting, I see.
Yes, achievement hunting at the moment. So, yes, so look to see him if he keeps going. He'll probably do – Yeah, I think he's probably got a good chance to take it out if he keeps going down there.
All right. Well, let's move on to the achievements of the week. We got a good number of them this week, so I'll let you start us off.
Yes, so – December 14th, we have Touchpad Pro, who is a regular in our friends chat, hit 120 Slayer. Vanit K hit 99 Farming, one of your favorite skills there.
Indeed.
Cyan R on the 13th of December did both 99 Strength and Attack. And speaking of Sorensen, Sorensen 57, 120 Farming and 120 Defense on December the 11th.
Nicely done. Nicely done. Continuing on the 11th, we have Kotahi Atwa with 99 runecrafting. We also have Halal Bacon with 99 constitution on the 11th.
I love that name.
Me too. Me too. Moving on to December 9th, we have Zookeeper 53 with 99 Dungeoneering, as well as Mama Mystic on that day with 99 Runecrafting. Cyanar is back with 99 Invention on the 9th. And finally, we're going to end off with Psy with 99 Invention and 99 Mining on December 8th. Congratulations, everyone.
Well done, everyone. All good achievements.
All right, so pick of the week time, and this one is truly a steal. What do you got for us?
Yeah, so this was actually sent to me. I've never actually seen these Humble Bundles. I've heard about them all the time. You guys talk about them a lot, but this link was actually sent to me by sort of one of my clan mates, and it is the Vegas Pro Humble Bundle. So for $20, you get a whole lot of. Whole lot of different software, but obviously the most important one is the Vegas Pro 14. Normally sells for $399. It's there for $20 at the moment. Comes with a bunch of other ones. There's the Web Designer Premium, Vintage Effects Suite, a Video Sound Cleaning Lab. There's a Photo Designer. One that my son will love, the Hip Hop Beat Producer. I'm going to load that onto his computer because he loves his music and such. Stranger Synths, Music Maker 80s Edition. There's a Photo Manager. So, you know, all these programs for $20. You know, obviously Humble Bundle is a donation thing. But the Vegas Pro for that amount of money for any budding sort of content developers out there, it's a great program to use. So get on there.
Yeah, Vegas Pro, Premiere, and I want to say Final Cut, but I really can't say Final Cut anymore. We're all kind of in the same league of professional video editing software. Vegas Pro is used. I think Premiere is the. From Adobe is the main one that lots of professionals use, but Vegas Pro can do practically everything that Premiere can do, and for $20 it's something I think that anyone who, you know, wants to make videos in this day and age should probably have. You know, I would even consider switching to Vegas for this amount of money, but unfortunately they don't appear to have the Mac version on here. It's just Windows, and I'm not willing at this point to move the entire production stack to Windows for it. So
that is sad, but yes. But yeah, I've always used another program, but you know, Vegas Pro is one of the premium ones, so it's one that I've definitely put on now.
And for $20, that's great. And its original value is $400. So that's utterly amazing. You have 11 days left to purchase this if you're on the fence. Thank you for that. Nice to see Humble Bundle again mentioned on the podcast. So what have you been up to this week on RS?
Myself, not a lot. I've been sort of AFKing a lot down at my Dark Beast, sort of hoping against hope to get the Hazelmere's Signet Ring. Always, I mean, that's the only ring I wear in game at the moment is the Luck of the Dwarves. So just doing a lot down there. Did the quest yesterday and then realized how great the XP is at this energy rift. So, and because you can get the pets here now, just been sitting there doing that. So that's pretty much been my RuneScape this week. Bit boring.
Yeah, my week was boring as well. I have been, of course, working on the final episodes of RSPB update for the year, which, of course, everyone always anticipates. I'll mention more about that in just a moment. But RuneScape-wise, just been continuing with the Fishvention, did a Dark Beast task, and finished off my siphon to level 9 on my armor. The weapon will come shortly, and then I'll probably move to some kind of disassembly like we were talking on last week's podcast, Armadale crossbows maybe or something like that. We'll just wait and see on that. And, of course, the Christmas quest as well. So, have you gotten any of those Christmas pinatas yet?
I got on the first day of release, I picked up six. I haven't had any since then.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, I believe on Christmas Day they're going to be uncommon again rather than rare. So I'm just saving them all up at once, and then I'm just going to sort of announce and try and have a bit of a party with them all and just do them all at the same time.
That's nice. All right. Anyways, final episodes of RSBNB update for the year. Okay. So next week, barring a major catastrophe on RuneScape, i.e. Sliskay's endgame, or a turnaround in release strategy like we had with Metaphos, we will be doing a lore special. This is something we've wanted to do for a long time on the podcast. And what we're inevitably going to do is we're going to have a high-level overview of all the storylines and all of the ages and where we are and how they all interact together, where we are right now in the Sixth Age, as well as maybe touching on a little bit about RuneScape cosmology, which is something that we first heard about at this year's RuneFest lore talk. So that's what we'll be doing for next week's podcast.
And can I ask, are we having the resident lore expert on for that episode?
Yes.
Oh, excellent.
Yes. And the following week, of course, is the Clip Show. Clip Show host is always kept secret these days. I'm not going to reveal who that is at this time, but
Chief Snake.
maybe not. We'll wait and see. But Clip Show, of course, covering all the clips of the year, including Pick of the Year, where we pick Pick of the Week from the year and talk about what was RSBNB update for 2017. So that pretty much wraps up the traditional episodes of RSBNB update for the year. Thank you, Parnassus, for being here this week. Nice having you on again.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, and it's been great. If I can just give a little plug out there, just on the RSBNB website, if you head out there, I actually put up a quest proposal for Goshima. I think you spoke about it last week, but love to hear people's feedback. So if you have time, go and have a read and just leave me some feedback and tell me what you think of it.
All right, and I'll be sure to include a link to that in the show notes. And speaking of that, you can find full show notes at update.rsbnb.com. You can also find out how to subscribe to the podcast there on the left-hand side of the screen. Pretty much every podcatcher that you would want to use at this point in the game is there. We're also on YouTube at youtube.com/rsbnbstaff. And if you want to chat with us in-game, as we mentioned earlier, the friends chat is BitsBytes. And we're also on Twitter at rsbnb. So with that being said, we'll see you next week for the lore special of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
Adios.